Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to Geek Grills, a podcast about geeky things, hosted by women, but today just one. I'm September, also known as 9 of 12. Jen has a conference today, something about learning more about essential oils. I couldn't find the note she left, I'm sorry. And Lunescence is, as she mentioned in a previous episode, doing this really cool project called Will Act for Food that benefits charity, and I'm sure we'll talk about it when she's back. Today we have a special guest, Eugene Shenderov. He's the founder of This and That Games. He's developed two card games set in the Cold War, Most Glorious Comrade and Most Incorruptible Patriot. Actually, you've heard me talk about them on the show before, and I did review them for the other cast I do, Part-Time Gamers. Their new tabletop game, Sea Turtle Scurry, is now in production after another successful Kickstarter campaign that This and That did. So say hello, Eugene.
Yes, hello, 9 of 12, and hello, listeners of the podcast. Thank you for having me on.
And you can go ahead and call me Ember. We've met in person and all.
All right, Ember.
So what have you been up to this week in your nerdosphere?
Well, in my nerdosphere, soon we're going to be having a tabletop get-together later today. And also, I've been working on a variety of game projects, both my personal ones, as well as some with my master's program that I'm currently in. I'm the School of Education at UNC Chapel Hill currently, and the program is called the Masters in Educational Innovation, Technology, and Entrepreneurship. So my interest in this program is to create games for education. And we're working on two, both a digital and a tabletop game for two of my classes. The tabletop game is for helping sixth graders understand geometry better in the form of a legacy tabletop game. So that's really exciting. We're working on that right now.
We'll talk definitely more about that when we get into our discussion. I glad you brought that up. I have relevant questions for that. I'm just a dork. I made more of the World of Warcraft cookbook jerky. I altered the recipe so it's paleo friendly. And I guess they'll be blowing a surprise, but Jen, I mailed you some. And when while I was in there, I was talking to the local comic book store guy, and they do want me to make some dice pouches. There's a Comic-Con in Statesville next week, actually. And I'm going to make some dice pouches for them to sell. And they might let me sell some comics. I have like three giant lawn boxes that belong to Connor. And he's having a little trouble meeting his bills and tuition right now. And selling this kind of thing online is cumbersome and not necessarily as profitable as selling them out of a box at a con, but all the tables were taken. But I have a really good relationship with R&B Games locally, and they might let me set up and help Connor make his tuition payment.
What Comic-Con is this
going to be at?
Oh, cool. Because I know there's going to be a convention in Raleigh coming up fairly soon, the Playthrough Gaming Convention.
Playthrough? You said? Okay. Yeah, I think I've heard of that. I'll look into that.
Yeah, it's interesting. They had 1,000 people last year, and they're gearing up for closer to 2,000 or 3,000 this year. So it's growing.
Well, cool. Maybe it'll work out if it's after next week. Maybe Connor could come next week and pick up these long boxes and whatever's left, and then take him to that one. I'll have to see how much a table runs. So thanks for letting me know.
Yeah,
okay, so now we have a little news segment, and it is time for the Geek Grapevine. So I wanted to let everyone know about the Heroes Charity Brawl, because I'm a big fan of the Instance and Frog Pants people and Diamond Club people. So it's a This is the second one they've had. You can find information at GoFundMe/Heroes Charity Brawl 2, numeric 2. It is a benefit for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and it's a bunch of people who have podcasts based around Heroes of the Storm, and they'll be, you know, doing this really terrific event, and it should be fun to watch, and all the proceeds go to charity. So I have an Echo Dot, and in the news this week for Trek nerds, we can now call it computer. That's been the missing thing. So, sorry if you're also a Trek nerd and you always already changed your Echo or your Amazon remote device to respond to computer, because I might set it off on you. But if I say, like my husband did, computer, Earl Grey hot, and you freak out and get mad at me because it responds, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Because I was highly amused by the response.
That's great.
Yeah, I have a recording of last week before I changed her name. I decided to try and execute Order 66. And that's another I recommend. Amusing response. And if you're a Monty Python fan, try a few Monty Python lines and see what happens with her. I discovered that my 13-year-old is familiar with Monty Python. I didn't really realize that until he overheard us getting responses from the parrot sketch from the Echo. And then he started throwing stuff at it. And we're like, "We didn't. How did you even know that?
How about Skynet Online?
Oh, no. What if how deep it goes if I ask it about Genesis? I was actually watching Terminator Genesis last night. So it occurs to me. I wonder how they're going to screw up the timeline to build
find
another
a way.
One. I feel like they at least went tongue-in-cheek with that. Like having Arnold smile and be a little silly.
Yeah.
So the last news item I wanted to hit. Do you know about this? Did you want to talk about
no,
it?
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, there was a comic book nerd, and he got elected to the city council, and he got sworn in holding his Captain America shield, and he took some grief for it. I think that
that's awesome.
Is cool as hell. I mean, he wasn't being rude or snarky. He had already been officially sworn in, and then there's a public swearing in, and there's one he missed, and I mean, I don't understand why they have to be sworn in so many times. It's kind of ridiculous. But he dug it out of the closet. And I think it's, if you're going to represent as a representative,
it's great.
Why not? Captain America is what it's all about. It's very
Wear it as badge of pride. Wear it as badge of pride.
Wear it as what?
Pride in your nerddom.
Exactly. And he is, like, serious. This wasn't like he ran out and got a little kid's one from Target. This is a collector's really nice shield that he had in his closet and decided to just be a proud nerd instead of hiding it anymore.
That's awesome.
I think it was awesome. And, you know, the people that gave him crap, they could just shut up. They're taking themselves way too seriously.
Well, welcome to the internet.
Well, yeah, there's that. Goodness gracious. So, on to our discussion. I have mentioned you a couple times on the podcast. I don't think you've listened to us, but you've come up a couple times because we've talked about how do you, you know, when you get a degree, for instance, and then you don't have any experience. And that kind of, you know, dichotomy that exists yep. in a job search when you get out of college.
Need a job and, to get experience, and need experience to get a job.
Exactly. And how infuriating that can be. And degrees that are under appreciated by the outside world, poli-sci, you know, liberal arts degrees of different kinds. And we were having this discussion, and I know we plan to have a future episode where we talk a little more in depth about that, because it does keep coming up. I met you at NC State at the Tabletop Gaming Club. I think, I don't know if Connor told me, Connor's my son who goes there, or it just was on their Facebook page, but you needed people to game test. And I thought, I would love to do that. I had never game tested. And so I made a specific trip to Raleigh to the club to help test. And then it was great because I'm so into politics. It's what I've been doing for like the last 13 years or so, 15, I don't know. And it happened to be a game that kind of had a political theme. It was the first one, Comrades and Patriots,
yes,
that you put out. And you were studying, you said you're in studying education now, but you were studying poli-sci then, right?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad in psychology with a large helping of business courses, because I was interested in getting into games more on a full-time basis. And my interest with creating those two first card games was kind of a tongue-in-cheek look at the Cold War, which I guess has become a little bit more relevant now than I was expecting, but, you know, that's how these things happen.
Oh, and your partner at the time, what
was
he studying?
So Charlie actually, he graduated about the same time that I did. He was an art major. Currently, he's working as a technician at UNC hospitals. Yes.
Well, that's quite different.
So speaking of liberal arts degrees, right? He still works on his own art projects part time, but after a while, he really just did not have as much time that he could put into the company. So fortunately, he had to bow out.
Well, the art, I love the art on these, and every time I show the games to someone, I mean, they are very impressed. It's kind of for those listeners out there, and we will put links to this and that game so that you can take a look and play these games and buy these games that Eugene has developed. But it's like Cold War propaganda art style. They're just gorgeous.
Yeah, we had a lot of discussions about how we want the art to look and to feel. So it was a very involved process, which is great. You know, working with Charlie was a lot of fun on the games.
And why I brought that up, I mean, I thought you guys were a really good example of, especially with the Kickstarter situation. And I will want to go into the Kickstarter, because I think a lot of people out there, they want to start Kickstarters. A lot of people have great ideas. And I see Kickstarters fail all the time. And I saw one of yours not quite make it, at least. And then you've created successful ones since then. But along with this, I mean, when you're in college, you were managed to, while you were studying and working, create this project where you created a company. So you've got amazing resume fodder that could be spun to relate to your degree as far as work in progress. You created a business plan and successfully executed it while you were going to school. So you end up leaving, you know, with not just your degree, but a resume full of what is real life business experience that
yep,
made
and
some money.
Continuing. The company, it hasn't been 100% self-sustaining, but it has more or less paid for itself, which is a good first step for a company, not being a money sink.
An amazing first step while you're still like in school, yeah. For goodness sake.
Thank you.
Good job.
I did have a period of time where I was working part-time and out of school before my master's program started, so that also gave me some time to go to conventions and sell the game. I'm actually almost sold out of our out of Comrades and Patriots. We're down to less than 10 copies of Most Glorious Comrade and something like 15 copies of Patriot.
Oh, wow. I should talk my LCBS into buying them. I mean, I'm always showing, you know, the copies. I bought the first one ever. Yay. That one's kind of put aside, my issue one, you know. But then being able to buy, when the second one came out, Most Incorruptible Patriot, you did another Kickstarter, right? It was a second Kickstarter where you could get the bundles?
So our first Kickstarter, which was unsuccessful, that was for, I think it made for something like $8,000. It was a long shot, frankly, for a first-time small company with a card game because, you know, card games are small. I think if we had made a larger game that maybe had, I don't know, a bigger splash, then maybe we could have made $8,000. But what we did was instead of doing a large print run overseas, which is what the first Kickstarter was for, we did a small print run with a print-on-demand company within the United States, which was a lot cheaper. And so we were able to do the second Kickstarter. And by the time we had that second Kickstarter, we had the second game ready. So when we actually did the Kickstarter, which was so that we could have tuck boxes because they had a minimum order size to have tuck boxes. Otherwise, you just got the cards in a plastic box. And I mean, that was nice, but yes.
That's what I got.
But it wasn't as nice as having a tuck box with kind of nice art specifically for the game, which is what the Kickstarter was for. And that was both Most Glorious Comrade and Most Incorruptible Patriot as a bundle, or people could get just one if they wanted. What was actually interesting is a lot more people got just Comrade. I don't think we had anyone get just Patriot. A huge number of people got both, but people were more the communist theme was kind of new. It wasn't something that people saw as much. Well, when they saw the Democratic leaders, it was kind of something a lot of people were familiar with.
All those people bought. Oh shoot, there's a card game out. Justin Robert Young's game. I can't remember. But anyway, they probably all bought that one instead. Or maybe it is just, like you said before, indicative of the times that people are fascinated with that kind of culture. Because
yes, the future president of the United States, right?
Right? I'm just like horrified. I mean, honestly, I don't normally get very political on this cast, but, you know, tough. It is what I geek out about. And I had a friend of mine who's my age, a few years older than me, post a YouTube video of, you know, the kind of preparation stuff that we just did all the time growing up. I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so during the Cold War, I mean, we just had drills at school where, you know, you get under your desk or you all go to the gym and, you know, air raid sirens going off and knowing where your bomb shelters were. And it's been really nice to raise my children not having to, like, just have that over their head. I feel like Gen X being so, I don't know, I think they created slackers. Because there wasn't a future. We thought somebody's gonna push the button. Like, there just wasn't one. We have a lot of really overeducated long-term students who didn't have a lot of ambition. I mean, the gap in the tech field right now, where, I mean, there aren't enough programmers for jobs and engineers for jobs, I think is related culturally.
Definitely.
But so now we're going back there, but I think my kids are of an age where it won't mess them up too bad.
Yeah, there's definitely hope for the future now, although so, we're going to have to build it ourselves.
Yeah, there always is with people for the, you know, with the character to reach for it. So, let me see. Chris wanted to know, I don't know that you've ever worked for other game companies, but for this and that, perhaps Did you guys sign NDAs? What do you know about NDAs regarding development?
What I can say for the for tabletop games, unless you're working with a huge company, there isn't going to be anything. There aren't going to be NDAs. In fact, they want you to talk about the game as much as possible, because a lot of companies are very small. So a lot of the marketing is grassroots sort of stuff. So in fact, if you're a tabletop game designer and you're approaching a company that isn't like Hasbro, you don't want to talk about NDAs, because that will show the company that you don't understand the industry very well, because no one really deals with NDAs. It's a very open industry, and saying that you want an NDA before you'll talk with the company about your game shows a level of distrust that is not very common in the tabletop game industry. In the video game industry, that's a lot more common. It's kind of expected to have NDAs, but not in tabletop games.
Well, what about on the other side? I mean, when I tested games with you, you don't have an NDA there. I could have gone home and ripped you off and got a game out before you did.
Well, essentially, first of all, you would have needed to find an artist to make all the images for you, and then make all of the cards, and then... right.
I know.
Theoretically.
I'm just saying.
Yes, it is.
I did not say that I could have done it well.
And that's really the quote-unquote protection is if someone can make the type of game that you're making before you can, and they can do it better than you can, then they deserve to. There are so many different ideas for games out there that ripping someone off is just not really a great strategy. If you honestly think that they have a better game than you can come up with, then you're not going to be able to copy that in a way that's going to be more successful than what they're going to put up.
Gotcha. I mean, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. I mean, by the time you get to testing, which is a curious process that I'm really interested in.
It's really...
I mean, what does it take? Because, I mean, last time I saw you was at Tabletop, and you had the game where you had to flick the pieces.
Yes.
With the ships, and the wind would change. I was wondering, when you mentioned earlier, is that the one... that's about geometry?
No, that's one of the entertainment games that we're working on. The geometry game is called Survive Mars, and it's very much focused on shapes and sort of different scenarios where you are trying to explore Mars, cross the landscape, and also building up your base by dropping pieces on a predetermined area to create a base on Mars. So that's a different game. The game that you're talking about where you're flicking pieces is my dexterity game of Broadside Battles that I'm working on. And that's more of an entertainment product, kind of, you know, the golden age of sailing and having people battle each other by flicking cannonballs at one another.
It was fun. I enjoyed it, but then there's the chasing the pieces. I have a Harry Potter Quidditch game that has that kind of mechanic in it, and it never got played. So I just want to give you a heads up about ages.
Right.
When you produce that, make sure, you know, because, I mean, we got it when the kids were little and it was, like, choking, and if it gets lost somewhere, they might pick it up later, and, you know, and pets.
Definitely.
And, you know, so.
Yeah, that's why the game has been on hold a little bit, because it's, we need to think about sort of how to put that together so that it makes sense.
Yeah, I wonder if you could make little miniature, like they have those hockey games with the pucks that are a disc with a ball
Right.
in the middle, a bearing. Have you a little hat where you could flick it and it kind of rolls, you know, like it would be more like shuffleboard and not leave the table and
Right.
go flying as much. So, I don't know,
Yeah,
that's an idea.
the choosing the right materials is one of the difficulties, and that's another reason why it's kind of hard to just take someone else's design and try to make it, is because frankly, the largest cost when it comes to a board game is actually producing it. So, taking someone's mechanics and ideas, I mean, that really sucks for the person who was working so long on making the game, but you're still going to have to pay all the costs of production, and that's the biggest cost in making a tabletop game. So, like, well, with a video game, the biggest costs are in the development, which is why NDAs and keeping everything close to the chest is such a big deal, because if someone copies it, they can just release it, and releasing the game is essentially free because it's a digital product. But with a tabletop game, it's pretty expensive to make it and ship it and get it to the customer.
And I really liked with Comrades, you had, you know, while you were still developing it, you had the online, you know, you could print it and cut it out and play it version. And I don't think that threatened your end product really. It just, but it was a good way to publicize, gain some hype, let people try it and know they like it before buying it. But I don't think anyone playing it in that format was gonna, you know, end up just continuing to play it in that format. I mean, you would definitely just drop the money on the deck, in
Exactly.
my
And
opinion.
really, it's kind of like it's a game demo, right? It shows you how the game plays, and it builds up interest in the game. And also, an interesting thing that I learned about the print and plays is there's a lot of people that don't play the print and play, but they download it just to look at it, so they get an idea of what the game looks like. So even if they're not playing it, then it gives them a better idea of what's in
Right. And I totally used it to cheat. I mean, I took a
the
look at it before I came to test and just saw in the rules that you get to go first, as Most Glorious Conrad, whoever's wearing the most red. And so I just wore a red shirt, which, I mean, I was going to NC State, so it was really easy to like not, no one noticed that that
game.
was, you know,
Right.
anything out of the ordinary until we started playing. But I thought it was funny and cute. Although going back to the politics for just a second, you said there's hope. I don't know if you remember, there was a kid playing, a student playing with us that was like, who didn't know who anyone was. Who's Che Guevara? And I was just,
Well,
it
that
made
was
me
one of the
sad.
reasons for, and that's why I'm kind of talking about doing games in education, is because it's surprising just how much people don't know. It's why I'm happy. I don't know if people will actually read the character cards. Hopefully they will in between turns, right? Because the level of just ignorance about who these historical figures actually were and what they did was astounding. When I was demoing the game with people, the history buffs, they loved the game. Non-history people, they enjoyed the game too, but not all of them kind of understood the significance of the historical characters. And what was really great was kind of teaching them why these people were important.
Oh yeah, I love playing that game. I mean, I'm a bit of a buff, but I'm not, you know, really, you know, encyclopedic or anything. So like there's you can play with a group of people and, you know, once in a while you get someone who doesn't know any of them. Usually someone who's at least knows the name, but having the reference where there are things about the mechanics of the characters that actually are relatable to their policy and their actions in history, which I just think was so. I mean, by the time the second one came out, which with, you know, with Kennedy and Churchill and stuff, I was so excited and I couldn't wait to see how you, what mechanics you created for those historical figures. Like, I couldn't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the idea of having each character have their own action. It came pretty early on in development, and I think it was really crucial to making the game kind of feel good, right? Like, you get a feel for each character based on what they do.
Yeah, and I can definitely see using it, I mean, as a teaching tool. If I play it with, you know, my son Victor, he's 15, and Fletcher is 13, you know, I end up explaining to them, like, why that character works that way. While they're trying to pick one, we got to have that discussion. And, you know, they roll their eyes after I get, you know, to about the third one. And then I leave them alone, but at least I can plant in their head with the first one they're looking at that it works that way. And, you know, they can learn something by attrition.
As long as I can get something in, then I'm happy.
So what you wanted, what, yeah, okay. What's the best way to raise concerns? We kind of have two things here. And Chris wanted to ask you about what's a good way, a productive way to bring up a concern or something, you know, negative to a developer. And you wanted to talk about how to take feedback and your experience with that. So
I can talk about the difference between constructive criticism and non-constructive criticism is in having actionable content in what you're saying. So, for example, if you say, this game sucks, I didn't have any fun. So saying I didn't have any fun to an extent is constructive, but just saying this game sucks is not constructive.
So more like I did earlier, don't bring a problem without a solution or a suggestion.
It is fine to just state a problem. It is the role of the game designer to come up with a solution. In fact, a lot of the time, the solutions proposed by gamers it's kind of like cold medicine, right? Cold medicine doesn't actually solve the problem. It just covers up your symptoms. So a lot of the time, the solutions that are proposed by gamers cover up the symptoms, but they don't help with the underlying problem. So, for example, if a player says, well, I didn't like how this character's power felt, it didn't feel like a very strong power, they might want to just buff the power of a particular character. But the underlying issue might be that that player's power isn't being utilized because the underlying mechanics of the game aren't supporting it. So there might not be enough of, say their power affects only golden cards in the game, and there just aren't enough of those cards in the game for them to affect. Right? So the issue...
Gotcha. So the balance is the underlying issue, and you'll just break it more if you, you know, buff or nerf one thing. Interesting. And physically about taking feedback, what methods other than face-to-face? And I do want to say you're really good at taking face-to-face comments and criticism. Your demeanor is very laid back. And which makes it feel like, you know, sitting around with a bunch of college students and listening to how they talk to you about this, you know, game that is still in the works, it's homemade pieces, and people, I didn't hear anybody be, you know, nasty or anything. People would kind of breeze by, they look down and go, what the hell is that? That looks stupid. I mean, I saw a little bit of that, but anybody who sat down and was open to playing, you took feedback in a very diplomatic, like, you know, it was like, that's an interesting question, or that's an interesting comment. Like, you take it like an NPR guest. You know, give your caveat, make them feel like they're still welcome to talk to you about it. So I'm sure that helped you, you know, get the kind of feedback you needed to finish.
Well,
you know, there, the products
from the game designer side, I mean, there's a couple of things. Just the fact that someone sat down with you to play a prototype, something that is not a finished game, someone took the time out of their day to actually sit down and play and then tell you something about it, like, that's something that you should respect. Even if they didn't enjoy the experience, even if they only have sort of, I guess, negative things to say, like, honestly, the people who did not have fun, those are the most useful people. Because the people who, their only feedback after they played the game is, this is great, I had a lot of fun. Then you say, you know, do you have any comments? Is there anything that didn't feel great about it? They say, nope, everything was great. Like, that's awesome. It makes me feel really good, but it's not actually helpful. It doesn't help me to improve the game.
Right. And that's a really good attitude to have respect for their time instead of being, because I can imagine, I mean, you put so much into it already and you're really excited to introduce it to people, and it would be really easy to just be, to take it personally and be hurt by a negative comment.
A couple of things that luckily I grew out of very quickly, that when I go to game design sessions, actually, so there's a group of game designers that me and Carrie pretty often. The group is called the Game Designers of North Carolina. I need to go back there. I haven't been in a while. But all of them are very good at taking feedback. But then I went to an event called, it was at Atomic Empire in Durham. There's these playtesting sessions, and some of the people there, they would show off their game, they're really excited about it, but when it came time to take feedback, even when I had constructive criticism, I would say certain elements of the game didn't feel very well balanced, or they didn't make sense. Instead of taking the criticism and then later either doing or not doing something with it, they would start explaining themselves. And when you start it, and I've been guilty of this as well, it's hard not to do, but when you start explaining yourself, much like in a relationship, once you start explaining yourself, you've lost.
It sounds like exactly. You're making excuses, so, right? But I think there's a balance to it, because when you give, from my side, you know, you give what you feel like is you're trying to be constructive. If you're mindful that the criticism is constructive and the person just smiles and nods,
exactly.
You don't feel like they heard you at all. But so if you can balance discussing the mechanic with them so that you're validating that
exactly.
You're hearing
so
what they're saying.
What you don't want to do is start explaining yourself. What you do want to do is to kind of get into the process which led to the feedback that they're giving you. So essentially, if they feel that something isn't working the way you want it to, then you want to go through kind of the story, the period of time within the game in which you lost them. So you want to find where exactly the game started breaking apart for them. And it might not be exactly what they tell you originally. Where you started losing them might be much earlier in the process of the game. It's just they can't articulate it until sort of they felt that something wasn't working. So, like, for example, if they get to scoring a game and they realize, oh, there was this entire part of the game that I completely missed, and so, you know, my score was really low because of it, then the issue might be that they didn't realize when that part of the game came up, they didn't realize how important that element of the game was to the final score. But they might say, you know, I felt like I didn't get as good of a score as I could have because, you know, like, I know, like, you, the things that I did in the game weren't scored as highly as they should have been. But the actual problem is that they didn't realize how important a certain element of the game was.
Gotcha. Interesting. So how did you get most of your feedback? Most of it was at testing?
And it's really hard to really get feedback on a tabletop game in any format that isn't physical. I mean, I know people who do even pay for people to playtest their game somewhere else, And they have people print the game and play it. And I've even done this for someone else. I print out their game and tested it. And it's just so easy to miss pieces or misunderstand rules, especially for an early prototype, that I'm not sure how useful that really is until the game is fairly close to the end of development.
So with the online version, you didn't have anyone that, you know, emailed you about it after trying it?
And I wouldn't really expect that. Generally, when people are, I mean, I guess if I had made a digital playtesting version, I could have asked people to try it out, but you won't really get a lot of feedback that way, and I feel like you don't really get a lot of useful feedback. Most game designers that I know, when they test a game, and I do the same thing, you listen to what people say to you in terms of feedback, but what's more important is seeing how they interact with the game, just observing what they're doing. And then when they give you feedback, the questions that you ask them a lot of the time are related to how they were acting in the game. So it's not just what they're saying, but it's taking what they're saying in relation to how they were acting in the game.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought you were studying political science. I think it was a conversation we had. We were talking about politics that had me assuming that. But it's just as interesting that you're studying, you know, psychology and education because of the way you've applied that to the
right.
game.
And I think studying sort of psychology has helped me to not get so angry when I take criticism. It's just, first of all, people are talking about the product. They're not talking about you. And I mean, it's just people are talking about their personal experiences. Like, you can't, it doesn't make sense to get angry at someone for feeling the way that they do.
That is true. That's a coping mechanism that will serve you the rest of your life. I got a lot of those when I studied psychology too, actually. So you want to talk a little about Kickstarter some more, about issues you had with it and the benefits of using it? Or do you feel you covered
that? I mean, I can mention that putting together a Kickstarter campaign takes a very long time. So you can't just kind of throw together a video and put it on Kickstarter and expect it to do well. The platform has evolved a lot since the early days. You really need to have a good presentation on your page and with your Kickstarter video. It needs to be very clear what your game is, how you play, and kind of what you're asking for and why. And just being very open and honest in terms of your communication on Kickstarter is very important as well. For example, we've run into some snags with Sea Turtle Scurry. I actually lost all the data on my hard drive and my computer was getting fixed for a month. And then I was sick and couldn't do anything really for a month as well. And so just being very, these things happen. But just being very open about, you know, the things that are happening and sort of updating the timetable in terms of production of the game is really important. So just being very clear and forthcoming throughout the entire Kickstarter process, because you're telling a story. You're telling the story of how you're producing this game, and the people on Kickstarter who are supporting you are supporting your project. They believe in what you're trying to put out there. So just letting them know about everything that's going on, good and bad, is important.
Do I need to check? I haven't looked. Because I bought Sea Turtle for my niece. What's the update on when that comes out? Oh, well, you're going to talk about that at the end of the show. Never mind. It's my personal investment.
It's peeking out. It should hopefully be out in 6 to 8 months, maybe sooner. It's just we had some hiccups along the way.
Okay. Well, I will keep that in mind and get her something else for her birthday. It's fine with me. It was really just an excuse to, like, this looks great, this looks like fun,
yeah.
It's for a younger age group, yeah. And I have a niece that I think she would love it.
I will say that, you know, everyone on Kickstarter always tries to make sure that their releases are on time, but getting something from Kickstarter by a certain date is always risky.
Oh, definitely. What is the other one? We invested in Codemancer. And that has been delayed over and over and over. I mean, I think it's been delayed by a good year. I mean, I really believe in the project, but it's gotten to where by the time it comes out, my kid's going to be, you know, too old to benefit, but it's something I would like to see in schools. And it looks like really fantastic. It's a video game where, you know, the spell casting and stuff is based around
really
learning
cool.
code. And I'm a proponent of, I think teaching code as a language is a valid thing in schools going forward. So I was excited to jump on board, but it's just been one thing after another. But I understand it because they have been fantastic, like you said, about giving updates, explaining what happened and why. There have been improvements, kind of more testing, more companies involved in actually investing in it to make the end product better instead of just throwing out something half-assed because that's what's finished. I appreciate it, and I'm still happy to be invested in it. So they've done a good job with that. It's a good example that it can be done. Just don't just drop everything, though, because that'll tick people off. So when you're making Kickstarter, you're making a commitment to a whole lot of people.
It's kind of scary. So, you know, just make sure you're ready for that kind of commitment. And back up your files.
Yeah, I understand. I lost a hard drive last year, and I just discovered, like, 2 days ago, like, I went to use something. I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it's gone.
So the hard drive on my computer just went kaput, and I lost my hard drive. So luckily, Charlie had the information, so I was able to get it from him. But that was not fun.
That sucks. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us today. I have really enjoyed your games. I look forward to watching the company grow. I hope you do keep developing games, maybe alongside or in concert with your career in education going forward. You're good at it. I'm baffled. I don't have enough brain. I have enough brain to enjoy the complexity that you've created in your games. But the idea is just coming one after the other. I have a lot of respect for your building and completing a business plan while you're doing everything else. It's really great. So I hope I get to continue to be involved with testing now and again.
Of course.
Keep me in mind. I'm willing to take it to our fans and listeners.
Great. Yeah,
as well.
I would love that.
What are you looking forward to this coming week or right now?
Well, right now I'm looking forward to playing some board games with my friends over here at UNC. And I'm also looking forward to working on a wide variety of projects right now. It's the creative part of game design is a lot of fun and I love it.
Cool. I got to get sewing. I got to dig through and see what nerd materials I still have left in my bin of fabric, and I'm looking forward. I'll probably hit, you know, a fabric store and see if there's a good sale on nerd stuff and get some pouches sewn up quick for next week's con. And I'm headed to Raleigh to do some gaming today. Well, not to do gaming, to hang out with Connor. We're gonna make some tikka masala and just hang out, but I would like to game while I'm there. We'll see if it happens or not. I don't have a lot of extra money to spend right now, but have you been to the Depot?
The Depot?
Yeah. I have a new favorite pub in Raleigh, and it's like an old arcade. It's got skee ball and video games and stuff, and there's like a cup holder on every machine, pinball.
That's awesome.
And it's a bar. Yeah, check it out. It's pretty cool. If you're, you know, into old school arcade stuff. Okay, let me see. Patreon. We use Patreon at Geek Grills. We are happy and want to thank all of our supporters who've kept us going. We're self-sustaining. We'd love more. We'd love to improve for you, our producers. So if you want to step in, if you go to patreon.com/grills, any amount is welcome. In for a penny, in for a pound. We love you all. We do have a new patron this week. We want to say thank you so much to Daniel for your kind words. You on the review you gave us, which is another way to support us for free on iTunes. He did that last week, and this week he signed up to be a patron. I've invited Daniel to our Slack and our Discord channels. We did play last week with some folks, and we used our Discord and got on Jackbox TV and played some Quiplash. That was loads of fun. I look forward to doing that more with our fans. We do still have codes to give away for our next few listeners that sign up on Patreon. For a list of the game codes, check geekgrills.com. There is a page there with a whole lot of Steam codes, so you can get something you like as a bonus. So where can we find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at thisandthatgames.com, spelled the way you would expect, and also at this N with an N, not an and, that games. So at this and that games.
Okay. I will have those linked with the show notes for our viewers to be able to easily find you. I can be reached as always at 9 of 12. That's NINEOF12 on Twitter. And you can hear me on the Part Time Gamers podcast, available at Caffeine Induced Productions. Lunescence can be reached at Chris Van Pelt on Twitter, KRISVANPELT. Jen can be reached at The Jen Says on Twitter, and streaming at twitch.tv/TheJenPlays. I know Jen and I are looking to partner with Willie Dills Gregory in some kind of Twitch has teams now. I'm pretty excited about that going forward as well. So thank you again for joining me today, Eugene. Thanks everyone for listening. Good game.
Enjoyed the show and have the quill skill to shriek speech? Leave us a 5-star unique critique on iTunes or thrill us with the size of your handbill by spilling goodwill into our tills at patreon.com/grills. We can also be found windmilling around Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/geekgrills and youtube.com/geekgrills, where we like to chill. Tweet your siren songs where the throngs belong on Twitter at geekgrills, where we're dressed to kill. For more info on the show, though, go to geekgrills.com, where you can find previous episodes, show notes, and current contest information. Send us your psalms and qualms to geekgrills@gmail.com or give us a ring at 508-474-5577, where we can hear your lovely voice sing the zing thing. Thanks for listening.